Hey, everybody, welcome to the UGA Sports Live podcast. My name is Roddy Nabulsi. I am joined by Dane Young, Jake Roos, Dave McMahon, eventually, whenever he gets his stuff together, and of course, the Hall of Famer Jim Donnan himself. I am sitting here live at Academia Brewing Company trying to hit these guys up for some free beer. If you hang around long enough and look pathetic, sometimes they feed you, sometimes they give you a beer. We are in their big conference room area. It's the place where they had like a fraternity event out here the other day. They've had wedding events out here. They've had corporate events every Tuesday. I think they have some corporate event going on out here. It's a big meeting room beside the actual restaurants. And of course, then they have the lounge area where you can go just go up to the bar and sit in the big fun couches over in the big lounge area. Incredibly immaculate out here. Everything is cleaned within an inch of its life. Of course, that's they do the canned beer here. So fantastic beer, fantastic food. If you get a chance, we're back at Academia Brewing Company. We're here on a Wednesday because yesterday, our normal Tuesday, was a normal I got a little squeaker there. Yesterday, we were normally doing the show on Tuesday, but we had a situation where Kirby Smart decided to have a press conference. And we found out that morning that he was going to do it at 12:30, which is great. I mean, we always appreciate when we get a chance to speak to Kirby Smart. And this time, he actually let us speak to three assistant coaches, which was fantastic. So we appreciate Kirby giving us that opportunity to talk to him and ask him questions and a chance to get to speak with Cortez Hankton and Dale McGee and Matt Luke. Guys, we normally don't get to talk to. Occasionally, you get the offensive and defensive coordinator, but to get the assistant coaches was a nice touch. So, Kirby, we appreciate that. Dane, I think we have some video, audio from yesterday. You want to give that to us?
Yep, we do. So we'll start with Kirby Smart. We've got one from each of the availabilities. And Kirby talks about, I'm going to share my screen and then audio slightly separately. So if you're watching this, it may be slightly off video and audio, but you'll hear it on the podcast as well. And here we go.
Team programming has been really big for us this offseason. We've started some skull sessions that are really 15, 20-minute sessions, small incremental things that we've been doing with our players in small groups. And small groups work a lot better. You get to not be in a huge group. Obviously, COVID, the pandemic helped with small groups. But the guys have felt a greater connection.
I thought that that was really interesting from Kirby, and it's something that he wanted to express early is the need for connection, which it tells me two things. One, it tells me that he feels really good about the athleticism and the talent on his team because connection's fine, but if you don't have the horses, you're not going to win the race. And so I thought that that was big from Kirby. But two, with everything that's happened in the last year, teamwork and then leaning on each other in those situations is so critical. And so I think Kirby has really seen that from an organizational standpoint, there's work to be done because a lot of these guys really don't know each other and their teammates.
No, I think you're 100% correct. And Coach, I'll go to you on this one. Kirby did not want to talk depth charts. He got a few questions about, offensive line. He's like, I don't want to talk about that. We start talking, asking him about secondary. Like, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about what's going on between the ears. Right now, we are working on toughness. We are working on, like you said, connection. You mentioned connection 100 times simply because he's trying to get these guys together. And he said that, I asked how many of you have been through spring practice before, and 65 to 70% of his guys didn't raise a hand because he has 16 freshmen, early enrollees there. You had the big freshman class last year, didn't get to go through it. So those early enrollees didn't go through it. So, and he has a very young team. And he said, look, we've had guys that only know each other through Zoom meetings. So we're trying to get everybody on the same page. We haven't had the time. But right now we are working on – and I know a lot of people kind of roll their eyes and go, oh, between the ears, he wants to talk about, leadership and stuff like that. But I think Dane hit the nail on the head. That's – in years past, when you had to worry about getting your offensive line bigger or your defensive line bigger or speed in the secondary or speed in your wide receivers, he's got all that. He's got the horses. But right now, I think you have to build that winning mentality. And I don't think us pestering him, and don't get me wrong, we did pester him. We asked him a lot of questions about lineup as well we're going to. But he didn't want to talk about that. He wanted to talk about what's going on with his players here in the offseason. And he really wanted to hammer that home. And I don't think it was – coach speak, I think he was legit trying to let us know that we're building something in the morale of this team? Address that if you would, Coach.
You know, the body can achieve what the mind can perceive, and you got to work on the mind for sure. And we are in a different element as far as adjusting to COVID. We had to adjust recruiting wise with all the Zoom stuff. Everything is an adjustment. So it's not the normal buildup, which, you know, I'm not going to go into that about what you used to do, but I do feel like that the smaller groups are good for getting more interaction. If you have a larger group, it's hard, you know, sometimes a dominant personality will take over and talk a lot, and you want to get these kids talking and asking questions. And, you know, a lot of times you think they know something and they know what to do, but they really don't. So you really do a good job of interacting there in smaller groups. And I think the leadership factor is really something we'll hear maybe from Coach Luke about Schaefer and coming back like he did, and Salyer. I think with Chubb and Cook, you just can't manufacture leadership by the way these guys, not only the way they talk, but more by their actions in the off-season program. And really, the off-season program is just a mentality of looking at the guy beside you and knowing that he's putting out just as much as you. And then when you get in a tough game, you know that this guy's been to war. He's done exactly everything you have to prep to beat Florida or beat Alabama or do whatever's necessary by sacrifice. And you got to sacrifice if you're on a team. If you're going to be on a team, you got to give up a little bit. Some of these guys are really good in the weight room. Some of them aren't. Some of them are great on agility. Some of them aren't. But he pieced it all together, and that's how you build a team. So I thought it's good that Kirby was forthright talking about it. And, you know, I think from my standpoint, you build your team in the offseason, no question about it. We lost that last year. No spring practice, no summer camp, no fall camp until we got it right up to the end. We didn't even know if we were going to play football. So he's working on the mental part, and I like that. And, you know, everybody's going to talk about how good we are, which is okay, but you got to prove it, and that's what they'll do here when we have spring practice.
Jay, he did not want to hear anything about how good Georgia was.
Well, you know, I think that, and I was going to ask Coach about this, one thing that wasn't included in that clip, but that he said and that really stood out to me too, was he talked about kind of rewiring the DNA for the team, and you got to do that kind of year in and year out. You know, is there really no carryover from last year? I mean, is there nothing you can take away from that? And do you have to establish that brand new identity going into each season?
Well, I think there's certain things you can take over because you carry over because you saw how some of these guys performed in the games and, you know, what they can do and what they can't do. But you certainly have some areas that are of concern that I'm sure Roddy and all those guys asking questions about the secondary and all that yesterday. But the big thing for any coach is to assess in the off season, which they've done with these analysts, with everybody around here, what won for you and what got you beat. So you're really not going to change a lot what's winning for you. What you're going to change is some areas of concern that you didn't do well in. And every team has that situation going into the next year. I mean, there's no carryover. If you were really a good red zone team 5 years ago, that doesn't mean you are one now. But if you won last year, there's a pretty good chance you're going to be the one this year if you got a lot of the same players back. So you got to assess the team as it was last year, who you got coming back, what you got coming forward, and look at what you got to do to beat your best opponents, which unfortunately for us and fortunately is our first game, because you know, you're going to have everybody's attention throughout the whole fall camp. You know, you got that looming over you, and it's a tough deal in D1. Now you lose one game, it's hard to get to the championship. So, that game will really be big on our agenda as our preparation continues with it.
Yeah, I was going to mention that the earnestness with which Kirby addressed the media yesterday, saying, look, this isn't just coach talk. I'm talking, we're working to develop that camaraderie, that leadership, that between the ears mentality, that toughness. You know, our guys, and he said, you'll see it in the sprints, you know, they have walkthroughs and exercises and They're allowed, well, I think it's 8 hours to do workouts and stuff like that. And they've put out videos of the guys sprinting, and, you know, you want to see the sweat pouring off them, wants to see which guys are touching the line. And I think he was trying to get it across, because to go back to what Jake said, you know, do you have to do that every year? It seems to me if you're leading with, if you're starting off the season with a pushover, you know, and then you got a cupcake in week two, then, you know, South Carolina in week three, that's the way the season seemed to be for years. You know, you get that first SEC East test, you know, week three, week four. Now you lead off the bat with Clemson. You have to know how to win, that camaraderie, that relying upon each other. There's no buildup. And I think the Kirby's like, towards the end of years past, he's seen this in his going into his fifth, you know, year being a coach, seeing the teams progress and seeing them learn how to win. You saw that in year two when all those seniors came back and they got down against Oklahoma, was able to come back. It seemed like there were times last year when Georgia things would go bad and it took them longer to figure out how to overcome those situations. And now I think the Kirby's like, look, we have to be on page 78 to start the season. We can't start on page one. Or am I reading too much into it? Is this just wishful thinking?
No, you mentioned too, Roddy, and I think that Kirby Smart can't go into year five talking about talent, or I guess lack thereof, at any position, because it's all on him right now. You know, this is his roster. These are his guys. Everyone knows the star rankings. They know that there were three number one classes in a row. I mean, you expect the talent to be what it is. Kirby Smart certainly expects the talent to be what it is. But at this point, yeah, you've got to get those guys to, you know, live up to those expectations. That's the next step for all of this, is to take the talent. There's no question about that. It's how do you get those guys to deliver on that talent now?
Coach, we've seen this when we have our camps at Rivals. We bring in, you know, 150 of the best players in the nation. And also we start divvying them up and putting them on 7-7 teams. You know, it's like, okay, Trevor Lawrence is going up against Justin Fields. He's got, you know, here's his wide receivers. Here's his, you know, this guy gets this tight end. And you never know how it's going to pan out. The best team, you know, from a star standpoint, may not win our 7-on-7 tournament. They just don't have the chemistry. How do you develop chemistry when you have all these, I don't want to call them egos because that's unfair to the players, but when you have these really talented guys and every one of them comes in thinking that they're the next, you know, all SEC, all American, but now all of a sudden there's a lot of competition. How do you get them to say, look, you got to put your, ambitions, but, you know, you got to do what's best for the team. And guess what? This guy may be better than you. How do you deal with all that, Coach?
I think in the case of what Kirby does is, and he talks about it all the time about competition, our players know that they're going to have the chance to win the job, whether they're a freshman or a senior. And they know that's going to be based on how they perform in practice, not potential, but it's performance. So, and from that standpoint, he gives you a chance to not only contribute as a offense or defense player, but the inordinate amount of guys we have playing special teams creates a little bit of morale, because all these guys know they're going to have at least a chance to be on the team and contribute from that factor, prove that they're capable of handling the pressure of a game situation, and then maybe give you a better shot of getting in there in your respective position. Some positions require more depth and talent because, you know, you use a lot more D linemen, you use a lot more receivers, but you don't sub much on secondary or offensive line. You sub maybe in running backs. But I just feel like that not necessarily you or stats or anybody on this show, fans get way too caught up in worrying about how we're going to keep these guys happy. Listen, these guys are happy. They're on full scholarship. They get a stipend that make more money than a lot of the people watching this. So it's not like they're struggling. I mean, I think they deserve all of it. I know they do. So I'm not poo-pooing that. They deserve it. But these guys have got it pretty good. The only problem is their social life has not been what it needed to be to enjoy a college life and enjoying being around the guys and doing the things that all of us did as college students. But it's a good gig for a player. I mean, and if you're a second team guy, you're at least here and you're contributing, and you know you're going to have a chance maybe if you wait your turn. I think one thing that's helped us here is some of these guys have hung in here and have not left and split the bucket, so to speak, and it's turned out pretty good for them. A guy like Breeny, a guy like Speed, these are guys that could have left and probably played at a lesser school, but, you know, things have worked out good for them. Some guys here have left early. Some guys have, hadn't panned out at that position. And all of a sudden they're looking at starting spring practice, maybe being the first guy. So you can use that too. I know Kirby talks about the mental part, but you can say, look, and he'll bring it out right in front of the whole group. This guy right here has stuck it out. He deserves this opportunity. And I'm just telling you, as a freshman, if it looks real tough for you and it looks down the road like you're not going to be able to do it, look at this guy. He was in the same position as you. He hung in there. He listened to the coaches. He lifted weights. He went to class. And now he's going to be a starter at the University of Georgia. So yeah, all that stuff adds up. But I think that this is not a situation where our coaches are worried about keeping guys happy near as much as the people on the dog fan are.
Yeah, well, now Chris Smith says hello, you know, when got his chance, got in there, played a lot. So that's a guy who – you know, didn't quite see him for a while. Then all of a sudden he got his opportunity and played quite well.
Well, and further evidence of it too, is guys that came back. And that's one thing that Dale McGee talked about, because, you know, I had thought that maybe it was just all the media blowhards like us that are saying, oh, this feels like 2017, Sony Michel, Nick Chubb. Well, for Dale McGee, it was the kind of the same thing. So I'm going to share his comment about 2017 and the guys returning now.
It's very similar to the situation when Sony, Michelle, and Nick Chubb came back. I think from a team standpoint, they wanted to do more, and they feel like they're a part of that and part of the success that we can have.
So they wanted to do more, is what he said. And, you know, in 2017, it worked out for Chubb and Michelle, and it didn't cost them anything in terms of their draft stock. If anything, I think you could argue it probably helped them.
What I like about what Coach said, Dane, and to back up your point, in 2017, Sony and Nick came back wise, but in 2018, it was DeAndre Swift being a brand new guy. We knew that he had some potential, but we didn't know what he had. Last year, we had Zamir White. We knew he had some potential, but we didn't know what he had. This year, we know what Georgia knows what they have.
That's a great point. And also remember they had some big defensive guys that stuck around in that 2017 year, getting Davin Bellamy to come back. Lorenzo Carter coming back was big. I think each of those had a game winner, you know, and it was that leadership, that senior leadership, that ability to win a game, the stuff that Kirby's trying to teach his guys now. You notice that we keep getting these little tidbits, like they had a dodgeball competition, you know, after, I don't want to call it practice, but after one of their walkthroughs, after their workouts, you know, they had a tug of war competition. No surprise that the tug of war competition was won by the defensive lineman. If you think about, big Jordan Davis as the anchor back there, I don't care how many great offensive linemen you have, Jordan Davis, Devondre, you know, Zion Logue,
Wyatt,
Stackhouse,
Walthar.
Walthar, all those guys back there. So you get a couple top, you know, running backs come back, you know, leaders in on the offensive side. Justin Schaefer comes back, that's huge. Jamari Sawyer comes back, that's huge. You know, your offense feels good, and they're the ones with that have something to prove. But then you get these defensive guys coming back, and I think that's a big deal. And, you know, they're showing that, hey, I don't care how many good offensive linemen you guys got. We have team position pride, and we're going to win the tug of war. And the wide receivers win dodgeball. How is that not the quarterbacks?
The quarterbacks are supposed to have the arms.
Not surprised. Well, you got to have a little flash to play some dodgeball.
I guess you have to – in dodgeball, I guess when you catch the ball, you're out. And that's you're eliminating other
players. There it is.
Okay, have you watched JT Daniels try to dodge a defensive lineman?
Yeah.
I mean,
oh, that was so mean. That was so very mean.
Do we have a Patches O'Houlihan teaching them how to play dodgeball games?
That's nothing wrong with JT, but I wouldn't think the quarterbacks would win the dodgeball. But I do feel like that morale is such a key ingredient of any organization. And if you're going out there lifting weights every day, running, you know, yesterday they took them down to the stadium just for a different situation. They went down at 6 o'clock in the morning and just a unity type thing and did their drills down there just for a different type of thing. But you got to think about it like this. How many of those guys, of those 16 players that are new players on the University of Georgia, have ever been in Sanford Stadium as a player? As a Georgia Bulldog, and to take them down there and have their first chance to go out there, and it had to be an enlightening experience for them. I guarantee you they were jacked up, even though it was early in the morning. But that, to me, that's a different type of motivation here, but it's also a reward. I mean, you're at the University of Georgia, you get to play in Sanford Stadium, you get to work out at it, and you don't take that for granted. And we always said, and I'm sure Coach Dooley, Coach Rick, Coach Goff, everybody that's involved with the program, when we go down to Sanford Stadium, it's important. More important than any kind of thing we ever do, because it's life or death. You got to win that game. We go to a practice down there. I'm taking you down there because I want to simulate what it's going to be like on Saturday afternoon. I'm going to apply the pressure to you just like it would be on Saturday afternoon. We're going to do it at practice too, but we're going to ramp it up when we go down the stadium. So you referees, you trainers, managers, you analysts, everybody, when we go down to Sanford Stadium, get your ass in gear.
You're rocking and rolling.
And that's what they did yesterday, 6 o'clock in the morning, ready to go. And those young guys got their chance to do it.
Can think of the butterflies of a Brock Vandegrift. And I have a pet peeve. I've told my staff about it. I'm guilty of it, but it always drives me crazy when every journalist goes to a stadium, you know, every writer, every photographer, he takes a picture of the stadium, you know, or he or she puts out the tweet, my office for the day. And I'm like,
my view from my office. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, we know you work there. We know you're covering a game. You've been doing it for 30 years. Yeah, we don't need to know that you're back at, you know, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. We get it. You're basically just rubbing it in people's faces who aren't there, you know. Put out the link to the live thread you're going to have. But the players, that is their office for the day. That is their workplace. And you think about those 16 guys walking out there. Last time they were there was probably 18 months ago or something, when they were there as a recruit. Jake's taking pictures of them in the stands and watching them come in and seeing who they're talking to, which coaches are talking to. And when you're on the sidelines and they shoo you out of there after all the teams have warmed up, now you're back in the stands. But this time you're walking around down there and, yeah, you came for a recruiting visit and they put you out there with the lights and music and everything. This time it's different. Now you are – this literally is your workspace, you know, and you get that promotion and they put you in that corner office. The first time you walk in and look around and go, this is where I got to get it done. I got to think that those guys had quite the different, come to Jesus moment when they walked out on the field yesterday morning.
You know, another thing about an off-season program is just the symbolism of doing the things the right way, the Georgia way or whatever coach, wherever you're coaching. But, and you mentioned, you know, whether it's agility drills, whatever they do, these step overs, all these things that they do. It's competitive. You're in your group. The linemen are working together, the backs. But there's a reason we say run to the line, touch the line, you know, because you're finishing the whole situation. You're finishing the drill. The same thing. There's a reason there's a goal line. You got to cross the line. So anybody that's going to do an agility drill, you know, you've seen these people go touch one line, go back and do the other, and then sometimes they don't touch the line. Hey, you miss the line once, you're going to miss it twice. You miss it twice, you're going to miss it four times. Hey, you got to do it the right way every time and finish it and do what you're supposed to do. And the other thing about having the coaches watch you is the pressure of knowing that these guys are watching you and analyzing you and seeing how you work when you get a little bit tired, when it don't go and get stuff, how you reacting and competing against these other guys. You first in line, or you waiting around, you got your hands on your hips, or what are you doing to try to make yourself better? And I read an article one time where Pete Carroll, who I think has always been really kind of cutting edge on a lot of stuff, but he was talking about when he was coaching for the Minnesota Vikings, and he was an assistant coach. And after they finished practice, the coach said, okay, we're going to run some laps now. So, and he noticed that several assistant coaches walked off because practice was over. Well, the next morning at the staff meeting, the coach gets up in front of everybody and says, how do you think those players felt when they were running laps and you walked off the field? And it really didn't matter to you what they were doing. He said, I want you to watch them, and I want you to see who's competing and who's trying to be first and who's lollygagging and everything. If we're going to finish practice, we're going to finish when everybody leaves the field. Not when it's over with and we're doing something extra. If they're doing something extra, I want you to watch them. And I think that's important for parents or that has a kid doing something. You go over there to watch them work out or go over there to watch them take a lesson or whatever it might be. You don't need to be on your phone watching your phone while the kid's taking a lesson. Watch him. See what he's doing. What they teaching him? What's he getting out of it? Show some involvement there instead of looking like, hey, I drove you over here. Now it's up to you. You get it done. I'm going to do my other work. Hey, if you're going to take the time to take them and be involved with them, go with it. That's the only thing I'm going to say about that. And I'm not preaching to you, but there's symbolism involved when you show interest like that. So put it on them and let them know that you're behind them and you're working with them. And on the way home, talk about what did you learn? How did that help you? How's it going to make you better? And can communicate with them instead of them being on their phone in the back seat or listening to the music and everything.
Now you're telling the coach, now my son's about to turn 17. So that's just too late. But Jake's got a bunch of kids that he'll acknowledge one day. And, of course, Dane has some girls who
– I'm not trying to stay involved with them, man. Come on now.
No, but it's funny because Coach – I don't even know if you saw what Kirby said yesterday, but he said, I'm taking note of the guys who were doing extra. I'm noticing the guys who were sticking around and throwing more balls and catching more passes and doing all that stuff. And
just one thing, doing the bare minimum, but if you want to do extra, that's who he's noticing.
And how many stories do we write, Dane, where we mention that so-and-so who's now trying out at center stuck around after practice? I mean, we break – to us, it's good scoop to say that Blasky kid was working at center and stuck around after practice to work with JT Daniels before JT was cleared to get some work at center. And JT, trying to get back to playing healthy, was taking snaps after practice. We talked about Richard LeCount staying late, doing work. There was the video, I think, was it DeAndre Swift last year, a couple years ago, showing up at
by himself
at like 11, 12 o'clock at night at the indoor facility to do some work. We take notes of stuff like that. The coaches do too. And Coach Donna makes a good point saying that, hey, if you're a parent, you need to do so as well.
How many times do you hear first one there, last one to leave? You know what's another word for those guys? Winners.
Winners, yeah. Well, speaking of winners and guys who touch the line, I want to give a big shout out to our friends at Athens Ford. They touch the line when it comes to customer service, when it comes to stocking vehicles, when it comes to helping you make a good decision on a new or pre-owned vehicle. They are the number one Ford certified pre-owned dealer in the state of Georgia. So if you want one of those fantastic vehicles, it has been owned previously by one owner, but it feels brand new. Those people don't drive them very much, and you get it for a song, and it goes through 100+ point inspection. That I got one, it felt brand new to me. It still feels brand new 4 years later. Yeah, it's been a while, but I love my Ford Explorer. And again, I feel like I bought a brand new car for a guy who was always getting hand-me-down cars and stuff that you had to rub two wires together to get it started. Having what feels like a brand new vehicle was a big deal for me. And again, it'll feel the same way for you when you go out to Athens Ford. They will take great care of you. Again, anything you buy out there will have a lifetime powertrain warranty, so long as it's under 80,000 miles on their pre-owned vehicles. And of course, all their new ones come with the great financing deals. They have ridiculous financing deals on the 2020s out there. They still have the new 2021s. And of course, they have the Ford Broncos. So when you get a chance, want somebody who will touch the line, who will do extra, go that extra mile, that is our friends at Athens Ford. And I know that we're into March since our last show. In just a few days, just over a week, we're going to have Pi Day 3.14. March 14th is Pi Day. And that is when you can go out to any of the EuroPie locations for 3 days. And you don't have to come in on that exact day, but on the 14th, 15th, and 16th, you can go out and get one of their big 10-inch pizzas for $3.14. Pi is 3.14. 3.14 is what they will charge you when you go out there. $3.14 for a fantastic customized EuroPie. Get it however you want it. That is a big deal for all their, 70-plus locations. Go by and get a EuroPie for $3.14 on Pi. I guess it would be Pi Day weekend.
It's an extravaganza.
Yeah, it's a whole kind of it's again, because I would, in Athens, you would go by any of the locations on Pi Day and you'd see people way out the door, you know, wrapped around the building. And they said, look, we can't just do this on one day. So they've expanded out. So, you know, with the COVID regulations, you don't want people, you know, standing in a 2-mile long line. So they split it up over 3 days. So you can do it the 14th, 15th, and 16th. Reach out to EuroPie and be sure to order on the app so that you get a good deal and get all the points. If you can do it on a Tuesday, you get double points. So hit them up then. I know we have some other coaches that were available to us. We got to speak to Matt Luke and Cortez Hankton. Do you want to run one of those for us there, Dane?
Yeah, we'll start with Matt Luke, especially since Coach mentioned earlier. He was right on board when he was saying that leaning on some of the older returnees is something that Matt Luke really wants to do. Although, if you hear what he says at the beginning of this, you can kind of hear the excitement for some of these guys coming in. Cough, cough, Amarius Mims.
No, I do think forward, we do have some pieces to the puzzle, but they got to go in there and get the experience. That's why, you know, guys like Jamari, guys like Schaefer, guys Warren Erickson have been around. They can kind of help set the tempo and lead these guys, you know, moving forward, especially coming up with spring coming up.
Pieces to the puzzle. Amarius Mims, that's a big piece to a puzzle.
He mentioned the same thing about Broderick Jones. You could see he was excited there. He was asked about Jones specifically, and it was almost verbatim answers. I am excited to see what he does in spring, and it makes perfect sense to me. I mean, this is a guy who is thrilled with that idea.
I loved what he said about competition as well. You know, he said, listen, what makes Georgia special is the amount of competition that we've got here. And I think that that's as big of a recruiting pitch as it is a soundbite for the media. You know, I think that the idea is, hey, look, we're established here. We've got players. We've got guys who can come in and fill these roles, but we're always open to the possibility of the best man winning out. And I thought that was really masterful of Matt Luke to work that in, because like I said, as a recruiting guy, I knew exactly who that one was aimed at.
And you're talking about like the competition, and he's also talking about like playing in multiple positions. Like Sollier last year was the best tackle for Georgia. This year, he might not be the best tackle, but guess what? If he tries hard and practices hard and does what he can, he might be the best guard out there, and he finds a way to play the top five people in the top five positions.
I think we should put one of these sheiks and the Dane, take them, and all five of us pick who we think the starting five will be when the season starts before spring practice and see how we came out.
I like that for next week. I think that we got a task on our hands here.
Yeah, but we're not going to go public on it.
Oh, we're not. Okay.
I'll put him in a time capsule. A lot
more comfortable.
It would cause too much consternation when you read mine. But
okay, anyway. I'll text you all individually. We'll put him in a time capsule, and then the week before the first game, we'll see what we think.
When people see mine, they would be they would think I was very crazy, but.
What do you know? You only said that the offense would struggle last year, and the offense struggled.
I think you're going to see a unique blend of moving guys around that's going to really take advantage of the different skill sets they have and get the best players on the field. That's what you got to do. And it's too bad some guys aren't going to be able to start for Georgia. They could be starting for most of the teams in the SEC.
Hey, Jake, you and I did have the same Twitter joke yesterday, and I was a little mad that you – I think you did it better than I did. But Kirby Smart had said that every player on the team could work out at cornerback, and he was kind of speaking in jest, obviously. I went with Jordan Davis. You went with Amarius Mims. We had the same joke, and I think you did it better.
Yeah, you got to think those big guys were like, I don't know, man. Maybe this is not exactly what I signed up for. obviously he's kidding, but.
I think somebody said last week LaVisa Carroll might be. I don't know.
Oh, yes, indeed. Somebody did point that out as a possibility.
Hmm. Huh. I wonder who that was. Probably that other podcast. They probably mentioned it.
After they listened to ours.
Are you saying they brought it out at 1 p.m. on a Tuesday?
No, it was funny that Kirby did mention that unprompted, no one asked him. He said, the fact that anybody he's looking for about it. Again, and this was after he said, look, I don't want to talk about who's playing where, but yeah, we need cornerbacks, and anybody could be one. And I thought their guys at the Oklahoma site had a good joke because they mentioned that Brock Vandegrift is rethinking his decision now. And I'm like, okay. And yeah, you can tell they're still a little ticked off about losing Brock Vandegrift to Georgia, but it was a good joke. And he's right. They do need cornerbacks. But as we mentioned, I thought our show last week, where we kind of broke down each guy in the secondary and how they would work out and how that competition's panning out, or how we expect it to kind of pan out, what each guy brings to the field, is I thought was a good section of the show, and reassured a lot of people that Georgia does have talent back there. Now, with that said, we have seen that a Clemson cornerback has entered the transfer portal. A lot of schools very interested on him. Kind of give us a breakdown of what's going on there, if you would, Jake.
Yeah, so former five-star Darion Kendrick out of Rock Hill, South Carolina. One of the key pieces of his class when he came to Clemson a few years back, and has had a lot of success. Came out as a wide receiver, actually, ended up making the transition, kind of an athlete through high school, though. Made the transition back there, and then, word comes that he's been dismissed from the team. Word comes down officially yesterday that he's entered the transfer portal, even though there was some discussion that perhaps he would decide to go ahead and test the NFL waters. Kind of the feeling out there is that maybe – you don't want to get dismissed from your team ahead of the NFL draft. So maybe give yourself a little bit of a reprieve and give yourself a chance to show, hey, maybe I'm not this person that was dismissed from this team for whatever reason. Georgia, obviously in the market for a transfer cornerback. Look, they're going to take best available transfers whenever. I think really it comes down with Darion Kendrick to a vetting process. What got him dismissed from Clemson? What were the circumstances there? They're going to be thorough about that, because I'll tell you this, and also another guy kind of in the same vein, a little bit different situation, Eric Gilbert, right? Back on the market in the transfer portal. Georgia, I think, feels comfortable about where their level of talent is. I'm not saying they can't add to it, but at the same time, you're not going to bring in a needless distraction if you can prevent that from being the case. And I think that that's what you're going to see throughout this vetting process. Yes, these are talented players, but what's the backstory and what's the background on how they ended up in these situations? That's what Georgia's checking out right now.
Couldn't have said it better myself. That's why I sent it to you.
Kirby's comments on defensive backs, to me, though, it also kind of seemed like a challenge to maybe, obviously, anyone else on the team, but maybe even potential walk-ons that, like, hey, come show out this spring, and who knows? We've seen that at Georgia with defensive backs. I mean, I think of a guy like Aaron Davis that played such a big role for multiple years. I mean, that's kind of where his path ended up starting.
I think it's if they give Lavoisier Carroll a shot over there and he gets a chance to show what he can do, He if he was paying attention to what Kirby Smart said yesterday, Kirby said, look, we don't have anybody locked into these positions. Everybody is a potential cornerback. And you're like, well, I mean, I know the coach told me that in the meeting we had the other day, but he's actually out there saying it publicly. He must mean it. So I think that is, and again, if Kendrick's out there and he hears that, he's like, anybody that they think that they can bring in through the transfer portal, or again, as you say, who's on the team, there's Keely Ringo. He's ahead of me. Well, no, he doesn't have the job yet. If you're
nobody has a job.
Yeah, if you're even a Darren Branch, you know,
like working at UGA Sports, man, nobody really has a job.
No, yeah. The part about not touching the line shows up a lot too around here.
Yeah. A little different there for Carroll, though. He goes in that running back room and sees all those guys that are established as compared to a cornerback. You know, you don't have the established people, but I think it's just the fact that he has that skill set like Webb did that, you know, he could maybe go over there. So you can experiment like that. But a lot of times you see long lines and things like that, and you see shorter lines in certain areas, you know, you have a tendency to do that. I know you brought up Rock Hill, South Carolina. That's where I started out. I was in the first, second, third grade in Rock Hill, South Carolina. And I went out to a little league tryout when I was in the second grade, and everybody's lined up at shortstop. And there weren't many guys out in right field, so I went out to right field. And my dad came running out there and said, "What are you doing?" Said, "You're an infielder." I said, "Yeah, but I'm in a second grade, but I can figure out I got a better chance in right field, and I do a shortstop."
So maybe then it's more of like a Tay Crowder situation, which obviously that worked out for him, and he got drafted, and he's playing in the NFL, and
he had a pretty good year last year.
He had a great season for the Giants. So,
Coach, I want to ask you this too, because I think one of the concerns is that if you take a guy like Lavoisier and you work him over there, how much does that set him back in terms of being able to maybe flip back over to running back if they need him there after this year?
Yeah, I just think running back's a lot easier. From a standpoint of, you know, you certainly got to pick up the calls and do the blitz pickup, but defensive back is just so many different variables, so many coverages, so many different techniques that if you're going to start out one place and have a chance early, probably that would be the chance. And I don't know that that's going to happen. And I don't want to proliferate that. It's talking about it 2 weeks, but he does have the skill set to maybe do that. He can jump back over there very quickly. I mean, you know, very quickly. So we'll see how they start out in the spring and everything. But, you know, the main thing for us is that's why we have the show, to create some blabber stuff around people talking about. But I think it's very, very important to know that that our players – understand that they're going to get the opportunity to play where they were recruited. And then if you communicate with them and they agree with it, then you move. But nobody's ever made the move to another position, particularly the first day you get to school, you know, unless it's both parties agree. That's just not the way we operate around here. Kirby's good about that.
That's going to be in the name of our spinoff show, Creating Blabber.
People forget too as well that Lavoisier was looked at by several of the schools that recruited him as a safety. A defensive back was what a lot of schools thought about him. He was a true athlete kind of coming out of high school. He leaned toward running back. That's what he wants to play. But at the same time, I think that there were a lot of schools that were really considering him just a guy you get on campus, figure it out once he gets there.
Oh, we've seen that.
You can't take away that speed he's got. I mean, that's right. He just got unbelievable speed.
And it's been a common thing for Georgia for the longest time. When you had a situation where guys would come in and play 1 year at the position with which they were recruited, and it feels like a wasted year. I think Mecole Hardman, I think of an Ogletree back there playing safety, you know, and Ty Grantham's like, "Son, do you want to go to the NFL? I need to get you closer to the line of scrimmage. Let's move you up." And all of a sudden he moves up and, hey, now it goes on to the NFL as one of the best inside linebackers in the pros. A lot of guys came in, switched from offense to defense and back and forth. You know, there are guys that came in were like, "Oh, he's a great defensive lineman," and their high school coach would be like, "Yeah, but he'd be a great offensive lineman." And all of a sudden, that's how they end their career. And then think of the guys like a Richard Samuel who went back and forth, you know, and just a true team player. I always give a shout out to
him. Mitchell went back and forth for a while.
Malcolm Mitchell did as well. You know, guys like that who busted their tail and tried different spots. And, you know, even a guy like Colby who comes in as an outside linebacker that switches to tight end, never, didn't really see the field that much. But, you know, there are guys that will do that for the team and to get on the field. So
I had three guys here when I was here. Adam Meadows was a tight end. We moved into tackle. He got drafted, played all the time. Chris Terry was a defensive end. We moved him to offensive tackle. He was a big-time draftee. Jermaine Phillips was an outstanding receiver, but we moved him to defensive back, and he played on the Super Bowl team.
Okay. Coach, you just named three of my favorite players. They're right there.
I forgot about Phillips coming in that way.
Yeah.
I knew the other two.
Jermaine Phillips was Greg Blue and Thomas Davis before Greg Blue and Thomas Davis. It was Jermaine Phillips laying the hit.
I guarantee you he could bring it. He could bring it hard.
Yeah.
He would not be allowed within 100 yards of the football field right now.
You get a flag every play.
He's dressed out.
I remember going over to Greg Blue's high school, and the principal said that I couldn't go to visit, which is true. You know, a lot of times they won't let you in, but certain times of the day. And Greg heard it, and he came out of his class and came out to see me. So it was pretty good.
And Adam Meadows and Chris Terry, you mentioned, those are two of the best tackles Georgia had in that time period. And both of them had a pretty good career. Meadows with the
it's amazing
the Colts
you bring
and
up
the Panthers with Terry.
Amazing you bring up Greg Blue and Thomas Davis. I know last weekend I was talking to Doug Marone, who's now the offensive line coach at Alabama, and we were reminiscing about the last class that we had here where we were getting ready to leave. And he said, Coach, so I remember when Greg Williams got me to go down and see Thomas Davis, and nobody really had heard of him, and we started on him, and then, you know, we left and they got Thomas Davis. So we've talked about Greg Blue and Thomas Davis here today, and both of them's name came up last week. So that's amazing. But give old Doug Marone a lot of credit for getting Thomas Davis on the hoof, and then we ended up leaving. And then
good eval on y'all's part there.
Yeah. You know that. But no, it goes back to the guys that, you know, that we've seen the ones who come in, and that's not to, you know, say what we expect for Lavoisier Carroll. I think that you know, there's a couple of wide receivers. Georgia's had four different wide receivers go into the transfer portal, guys who got recruited over, guys who are going off somewhere else to play. But Georgia is loaded at, feels to me, at the wide receiver spot. And we got updates yesterday on Dominic Blaylock and Marcus Rosemy Jack Saint. They're both doing inline running. They're not quite cutting yet, but they're well on their way to being back. You've got Burton. You've got George Pickens. I thought we had a good thing from Cortez Hankton talking about how George is maturing. And it was kind of nice to actually hear from Cortez Hankton. We hadn't really heard from him before.
Would you like to hear from him now?
That was my segue. Thanks for jumping ahead.
I just barreled through. That's okay. Here's Cortez Hankton.
Granted, we are talented, and you see some flashes of some things, but, you know, we have to become more consistent at the position, and there are some things that we can improve on, you know, and so we can't be complacent and comfortable just because we have the skill set to perform at a high level. We need to make sure day in and day out we compete.
It's a different sounding, I would say, tone about the wide receiver group, because if you think about it, 2 years ago, that was probably one of the weakest areas of the team. And so it's just a complete transformation in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, we ended up getting left out a little bit there when we had those three guys leave early, and then Holloman was kicked off the team. You know, it's just hard to replace four guys like that. And this gave us a tough situation. Fortunately, we got the transfer from Miami come in, and he was doing a good job, and he got hurt. But you know, it looks good on the hoof here. It looks good personnel-wise, and I think that's going to be a good situation for our defensive backs going against these guys all spring. It'll be a good learning curve for them to compete against those kind of receivers. That'll help them.
I was wondering, do we see any of those guys maybe – as we were talking about with Carroll, can any of those guys flip and play cornerback? I get that question a lot. Like, can any of the wide receivers jump it? Because, you know, we were at a camp. Well, I wasn't there, but Jake was. He was at a camp in North Carolina where he saw Demetrius Robertson try to cover
Mecole
Hardman and vice versa. You know? And neither one of them did a very good job covering the other because they're two, you know, great receivers. But, you know, they had that ability. A lot of these guys come in, as you say, as athletes, you know. And
yeah, I would say Arian Smith right off the bat with his speed, his really? Turnaround ability would be a guy. And also Burton, because of his physicality, his good hands. He could, you know, George is a little bit tall to be a defensive back, but he could probably do it. He could probably do anything he wanted to. But certainly those two could do it. And what happens with your team in high school, and Kirby brought this up 3 years ago, you know, a lot of times these teams don't play their best players as defensive backs in high school. They play them on offense, trying to generate some offensive stats and make, you know, first downs and all. So a lot of times you bring in receivers with the idea of knowing that you might move them to defensive back. So we just have to see on those what's going to happen there. But it's going to be a very competitive spring. We're going to be looking at, you know, how good we can be with these other quarterbacks stepping up. How are they going to do? How much improvement has Beck made? You know, it's going to be a very good spring from an analyzation standpoint of seeing who's going to be able to help our team out the most.
That's a good point. Speaking of helping out the most, when we were setting up in here in academia, I was talking to the owner, Matt, and he was talking about this big area. They're putting in a new bar back here on the other side. So they have a bar on one side in the dining area, but then in this meeting area, they're going to have another bar. And according to building code, every 50 feet or something, you have to have an exit. So he's going to have a door put in. And we start talking about putting in maybe a roll-up garage door, so that when the weather's nice, you can open the doors to our left and then have a cross breeze come through. And he's like, hey, don't you know? And I said, yes, we do. We know some friends who could do stuff like that for you. Our friends at Aaron Overhead Doors could knock that out for you in a heartbeat. They do commercial work. They do residential work. He said, well, I think I need a new gate in the back, you know, because they do all their canning. They have the trucks come around and they have to get all those big pallets of beer out. Yeah, we can get a new garage door put in there. And the first thing he did, he gets on the phone, calls Ryan Lucia at Aaron Overhead Doors. They're going to come out. The point being, the folks at Aaron Overhead Doors take care of their customers. They take care of new customers, old customers, and they do a fantastic job. And of course, they support UGA Sports and they support the Bulldogs. So
Ryan and Matt will love each other. Right? They would just talk Bulldog stuff left and right.
And then we'll get anything done. And a round of couple beers, absolutely. So big shout out to our friends at Aaron Overhead Doors. If you need any garage door work done, be it commercial or residential, reach out to Aaron Overhead Doors, AARON. They will take care of you. And of course, if you're in South Georgia, if you're in the Liberty County area, Bryan County or Long County, reach out to DR Construction Maintenance. Reach out to our friend Ronnie Brown down there. He will take care of it. I got some folks doing some painting at my house today. I really wish I could have Ronnie Brown up here to say, hey, they need to do this and fix that other stuff. But I'm not going to make him come all the way to Athens from Liberty County. The only person we're going to make do that
is Ronnie Brown to come here. I want to meet this guy. This guy loves what we do, and we love what he does.
All right. I feel bad that we couldn't get to a lot of the questions today because we had a lot to talk about with that with the press conference stuff yesterday. Dane, is there anything else you want to touch on?
I think we could do a couple of rapid fire questions.
All right.
I happen to have
as couple. I put Jake on the spot.
I happen to have a couple ready, in fact. Let's see. We've got a few here. Oh, I like this one from NYDog34. Coach, this one for you. He says, we see an emphasis placed on rotating Georgia's defensive line frequently with an eye toward keeping guys fresh through four quarters. Given the talent depth across the offensive line, might you see a similar rotation on that side with the same mentality in place? Or is it better just to keep the best five on the field, thinking of consistent communication across all four quarters?
Great question.
Yeah, I think certainly you'd like to be able to keep them out there. But if you have a situation where you got one and one A, then you're going to look and give that 1A guy a shot to see how he reacts in the game. But that's probably the least substituted position in next to quarterback on a football team. So you got to have that cohesion, that communication between the guard and tackle, between the center and guard, between the tackle and the tight end. They got to know what the other guy's capable of and what they need to do together in tandem. Everything we do so much in college football now is a zone-oriented scheme, and you got to be right in cohorts with the guy beside you. So, and you got to have the physical ability to execute it too. But I think that's definitely a good question.
I do think a lot of attention is going to defensive back and the changes there. Having a new center, that's a big thing. And I know there's some guys that have played center, but there's no one that has the experience that Trey Hill had, or, you know, Georgia has a legacy of really experienced centers. That's going to be a position to watch.
It really is. I think Erickson's has shown that he can handle it, and he can handle the snapping part. It's just a question of, you know, can you get a better athlete in there? I don't know that you can, just because this guy continues to show me that he's got the skill set, he's got the mentality. He's just one of those guys that's got that dogged personality and work ethic that, you know, hey, I've worked my tail off, I want to play, and he's very dependable. But at the same time, you got guys like Van Pran coming up. You know, Salyer can play center. You got some very good situation. But the only time you really – anybody's watching the game beside the really great sports people like are on this show that you ever see a center is when he's get a bad snap. That's what's going on with that center. You know, your wife asks you when the ball goes over his head or, you know, like when –
That's my all friend. I do.
They don't talk about the 95% of the snaps that are perfect.
99. All right, what's next question, Dave?
This one for me. I'm going to feed myself on this one. JScar86 says, the vent narrative this class is that Georgia needs to load up on receivers. Give us some info on some top targets. Kojo Antwi, Denylon Morissette, Keon Coleman, Sam Mbake, among others. What are Georgia's chances and what makes these guys special? I'll tell you this, Kojo Antwi looks like he's headed toward a commitment here very soon. I put in some notes the other day. By the way, go over and check those out because I thought those were pretty good. I know I wrote them, but I felt pretty good about them. On Monday, the recruiting notes I put up, I feel good about where Georgia stands with Kojo Antwi. Texas A&M always been a contender there, but Georgia really has put the pressure on him. Plays 7-on-7 with Gunnar Stockton, has mentioned the ability to stay in close to home. I like your shot with Kojo right now. Denylon Morissette, a guy that I'm still hesitant about. I think that he really does consider Georgia a major player. He loves playing with Gunnar Stockton, and that was a big thing for him. But at the end of the day, he's from Mobile. His whole family's Alabama fans. And when you see him, he's wearing Alabama gear. So you just don't win a lot of those. Just being realistic there. Keon Coleman. Definitely a guy to keep your eyes on. We haven't heard a lot out of him recently, but one of the fastest guys in this class. Georgia's really pushing hard for him. I don't know that I would call him a favorite right now, but I do think they're in the mix. I think they're a contender. And then Sam Mbake over there at Brookwood with Denylon Morissette. Mbake, a guy that I really like, I think is long, kind of that, bigger bodied receiver for your class this go round. I think Georgia's still in a really good position with him. Really might just come down to more so how hard they push. But get over there and check out Trent Smallwood's class prediction as well, because he's got some names that you may want to monitor going forward also when it comes
to – We need to get that on the front page.
I can handle that.
Hintity, hint, hint. All right. I think that's all the time we have for this week's show. It's a odd Wednesday for us. We're normally doing this on a Tuesday, and – I think our food's ready in the next room. So, yeah, we got to go. The beer's ready. The food's ready. We're going to have to cut off.
And just a shout out to happy birthday, Herschel Walker, if you're watching.
Of course he's watching.
Yeah, why wouldn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Coach, I appreciate you joining us. Dane, thank you very much. Jake, you had no choice. And I appreciate Dave coming out.
Anything going on?
All right, everybody. We'll be back on our normal Tuesday next week. We'll talk to you then. Everyone have a great week. We'll talk to you then.